champion to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Basket
then?
No, just aiming for the couch.
Let's just talk.
Peter Pan?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't want to grow up.
That's welcome. Like, no, that's the Toys R Us commercial.
Right, welcome to the Baseball Talk After Buzz After Show. Little Peter Pan, not wanting to grow up.
Not
the boy
to grow up.
Who never wanted to grow up.
Unless you're Wendy.
Unless you're Wendy.
Unless you're Wendy.
Whoa. Whatever he did.
Whoa. We wouldn't have sex. Whoa.
Welcome to the Baseball Tell After Buzz After Show.
Oh,
I'm Joe Braswell. Joined as always by the lovely duo Casey.
Hi, welcome.
And my man Nando Velasquez.
What is up?
Not joined for the second week in a row by Joe Sanfilippo, and then we'll get to that in a second.
Slow down.
But he's a good reason. He's out taking care of some business, but he will be back. Did he call him last week? He called in.
Some badness. No, right. He didn't.
No.
Okay.
He's been out a lot lately.
Yeah, for all right. Well, he'll be back next week. I guarantee it.
Guarantee.
He can't stay away. He can't stop hearing his own voice.
I guarantee.
welcome to this episode 2, the Arcanum Club of Base Motel Season 3, which was a very good, fantastic episode, which I liked a lot.
Or better known as Eyes Wide Shut.
Eyes Wide Shut. It was so... You know, his eyes weren't wide shut. My man Kevin Ram, who was sitting in that chair looking like a boss with the two ladies by him.
Is that who that was?
Yes, that was Kevin Ram.
Wow.
Kevin Ram, who will be in this, who obviously will be key to the season,
yeah.
Who played Ted Shaw, I can't pronounce his name.
Make up your mind.
Ted Shaw from Mad Men, or is it Shaw? I don't remember. Anyway, Kevin Ram from Mad Men is now a cast member of the Base Motel, as Tracy and Nestor talked about in our pre-show.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't see much of him. But we saw him busy.
What we saw of him was pretty badass.
Saw him just in his tuxedo, flanked by two ladies watching.
Gorgeous
ladies watching some business as guys in the Arcanum Club do, apparently. And yeah. So what I'm curious about, I'm skipping ahead of this, but when you go off into the weird moose house, and then do you just go, and then do you just go to get, because it looked like it's that bit big, first of all, look kind of small room. And you go in there, and then you kind of watch while Kevin Ram watches like in the throne. Like, how does this work?
I think that we don't know. I think that this was all from Norma's perspective, and I think that this is all kind of misdirection. I think that once we really get into it,
they weren't really having sex.
Yeah, I don't know what was going on. I don't know.
They were super having sex. I mean,
I can't even begin to think, because Emma said that she thinks it's a hunting club.
Yeah, well, they're hunting, all right. Anyway, it was good to see Kevin Ram.
So it did make me think about the whole sex slave thing, though.
Yeah, back to season one.
Back to season one.
Wow, yeah.
So we'll talk about that. But he wasn't looking an eye. He just seemed to be like, I don't know. That's the other thing. I don't know. I've been around the block a few times. I know some stuff.
I already hate where this is going.
No,
I'm
know
watching
stuff.
Joe's assistant laugh off camera.
I know stuff. Like I've never been invited to some crazy Eyes Wide Shut sex party.
Well, you gotta look for it, man.
Oh, really, Dua? You're sliding me the address?
What's wrong with you, Joe?
What's going on? Eyes Wide Shut, and then there's all these pop culture references to these high level, elite sex parties,
mm-hmm.
where dudes just kick it in chairs, glasses of champagne, a swirling of brandy snifter, and watching people have sex or participating. Nando, where is this?
You're asking me.
You're the Porn Star Tuesday guy.
Just on Tuesdays?
You went down there.
What?
You went there.
That's good. What's wrong with that?
So I like going to karaoke night at Sardo's.
All right. Way off track here. Well, let's get back to this episode. Welcome to the Base Motel After Show. So a lot going on. We're going to talk about Caleb and Dylan, who seem to be chumming up a little bit, and their sidekick, Gunner, sans Puka Shells, who's hanging out too.
Mm-hmm.
We have the mysterious Chick Hogan.
Oh my gosh.
He's
the cryptic man.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I mean, yeah, he's talking all kinds of madness.
Yes,
and tomatoes.
We have the
tomatoes.
We have the mystery of Annika. Like, you know, where did she go? Who is she? Where is she? What happened? Was that her floating face up in the lake?
And we were all wrong.
Who knows?
If that is,
you know,
her.
Your prediction was right that they're going to keep the red herring going, and she wasn't in this season or this episode.
I don't know if that's a red herring.
Well,
if she's dead, that's not really
a
red
thought about that. I can share later.
Okay.
Norma hates signs that we found that out. We'll talk about that in a second.
You see that was the Lee Berman?
Yeah,
Memorial. It was Memorial.
The Lee Berman Memorial overpass is what they're calling it now. She really hated that sign.
Yeah.
Levels.
As she said. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, appearance from Sheriff Alex Romero. Mm-hmm. And two separate appearances. Slow down there, Dua.
All right.
Two separate appearances.
An awkward kind of kiss.
A very awkward goodbye.
A kiss on the cheek.
Kiss backwards forward, which
that
is
cool.
That
seems to be their awkward moment place. You know, that's not their first awkward moment.
I like it. It's very cool. But so let's start with, I don't know, let's start with where we left off, which is the mystery of Annika. Like, where did she go? You know, Norma is, she walks up to the room and she's kind of like, you know, the Porsche is there, but the bed's unmade and what's happening, and she's trying to figure this thing out, and she's instantly concerned, but I don't know how much of it is her own concern versus her own like sort of nosy curiosity as to like what's going on with this woman, which is kind of the theme here. It's like, on one hand, she seems to be concerned. On the other hand, she's concerned for Norman.
Yeah.
But once it's all sort of figured out, she finds herself at this party, which I don't know. Was that her own curiosity? Or is she really looking for this girl? She went like, I don't know what's happening there.
This all seems really out of character for her.
Yeah.
Because she's concerned about Norman, and I'm going to kind of take it off track and talk about Norman here for a minute, because every other instance she's been very motherly and almost protecting Norman.
Right.
Here she's not. She's, you know, she thinks that Norman has something to do with the fact that Annika is gone.
Sure.
And she thinks that this is a whole, you know, the repeat of Blair Watson.
Sure.
But now, instead of being nurturing and protective like she normally is, I feel like she's almost getting it out in the open. Even the way she like spilled her guts out to Romero and told him what she was worried about. Norman was the last person to be seen with her. You know, I'm looking for this girl. So that, I mean, that to me just seems really out of character for how she's been nurturing him in the past.
It's true, but also there's a bit of, when we talk about Norma, sort of like, you know, she's very Norma-centric, right? She's very self, selfish. So I think that, like, there's a bit where she said to Norman in the car, like, I don't know how much longer I can do this. There's a sense of exasperation. Like, ugh, please tell me you didn't kill another lady. Oh, now we gotta do this thing. I gotta call Romero. We gotta hide the body. Like, you know. So I think there's a sense of, like, you know, Norman, you can't keep doing this, A, and B, I can't keep doing this. And then last but not least, Norma's always looking to be taken care of and protected. So does this look to Romero like, Norman was the last person to see him, and you know what that means?
Yep.
Like, help me out, you know, without saying it, without saying it. I don't know. How did you, what do you think?
I feel, I kind of agree with you. I feel like, she, you know, at this point, she's trusting Romero, and I think it's not said, but, you know, Romero's had his misgivings about Norman. And I think Norma, and I think Norma saying that pretty much without being like, well, I think he did it, you know, is pretty much cluing into Romero as to this is why you should pay attention to this right now, because Norman was the last person to see her. Also, I mean, don't forget when Norma went to the restaurant where Annika was supposed to be and she came back in the car, she pretty much said, I don't know if I can do this much longer.
Yeah, how much longer I can do this?
How much longer I can do this?
Do what, mother?
Yeah.
Okay, so let me just get into this really quickly.
Right. So flip some pages.
Last week I said there's nothing even written on these pages.
Right.
Last week
it's
I said
Joe Sanfilippo just constantly scribbling.
Scribble.
I mean, he's writing furious notes.
Yeah. Well,
Go
isn't
ahead.
He? So last week I said that it would have been ambitious to kill Annika right off of the bat. Mm-hmm. And based on the interview that we did with Annika and Romero, mm-hmm. I figured that there was going to be a little bit more meat to her character. Maybe her purpose was the fact that she needs to die in this, in the first episode. It would go very, very, So at the beginning of every season, there has been somebody that has died, and that has kind of fueled the direction of the whole season.
Well, there's a bit of a... Go ahead.
Yeah, but so did Norma's mom died as well.
Yeah.
So true.
See
that for that,
well,
too.
That's true.
There's a bit of a...
But Norman, somebody's died that Norman has killed. In season one, it was
his father.
Season two, it was Miss Watson. Huh. Now, I think that maybe this is just the death, you know, they're going to kill off Annika. I just think that it actually makes, if you think about it, it makes a lot of sense that Annika would die.
Well, and also not to mention the fact that, you know, we had, as you said, we had Nesta Carbonell and Tracy Spiridakos here right before the beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you assume when press are busy saying, hey, we have these two people, we'd love you to interview them, that they're going to have big roles to play in the season. But how much of a mind fuck would it be
exactly
to actually have somebody here who only lasts, pardon me.
I'm kidding.
I was going to say, if you're watching the show, you could take an occasional bump.
Right.
You know, how awesome would it be if the press said, hey, you know what? She dies in the first episode or after
exactly.
the first episode. Wouldn't
right.
it be awesome if we promote the hell out of her anyway and get people thinking the
exactly.
differently?
Well, and Nestor said she's going to be pivotal to the season. Yeah. That doesn't necessarily mean that she's going to be alive.
Right.
And then Tracy said she's definitely there for a purpose. Now, what is that purpose? Maybe the purpose is for her to die. The only thing that's inconsistent and the only thing that confuses me is that all of Norman's murders in the past revolve around his blackouts. This didn't.
We don't know that.
We don't know that yet.
We don't know if he blacked out or not.
Well, is he trying to then hide his blackouts from his mother? Because Norman never lies to his mother.
Let me unpack some of that. First, just working backwards, in terms of the blackouts, I mean, we don't know. Yeah, he does say that, but, you know, if he blacked out, like, he doesn't, at this point, we don't know. I mean, if we will find out eventually through mm-hmm. whatever narrative they're going to, however they're going to tell the story, like, what happened mm-hmm. on that drive, on that fateful drive home. It could have been Norman just could have just dropped her off and came home. Some other stuff, something else could have happened. Who knows? Yeah. But I'm sure that will be revealed in some sort of flashback. Mm-hmm. Number one. Number two, I agree with you. There's something, you know, at the heart of Bates Motel, it's almost like this sort of murder mystery, sort of a whodunit kind of situation that always happens. Now, mm-hmm. now, at the end of the day, it's always Norman who did it, but there is this thing, this whodunit thing. I do like the idea of, you know, this mystery, this body, and then the whole season being about, well, what happened to Annika, or what happened to this woman? It may mm-hmm. be Annika, maybe someone else, but this woman was found. Who killed her? It gives Sheriff Romero something to investigate. It gives Norman something to investigate.
Uh-huh.
It gives, you know, it sort of activates everyone. Well, I'm sure Kevin Ram will be involved in there. Who knows how Chick Hogan's going to be involved?
Yeah.
So it's actually very interesting to see this whole town. Like, we need something to get this whole town going again.
Mm-hmm.
The telltale sign as Norman was going up the stairs when he said famous last words, "Don't worry, mother, everything's going to be okay." Cut to a dead floating body. So we know in episode two, we have eight more episodes of this happening, which is good. If in fact, Lenton, to your point, if in fact, you know, Tracy Spiridakos is saying is not a part of what's going on, I mean, because if it's not part of the whole season, then she's a pretty good poker face.
Yeah.
Because, you know,
we did a lot of assuming.
I was like, well, you're here.
Was it you or it was one of you two when we were interviewing them where you said, well, after, because we all got to see the first episode before we interviewed them. And we even said, you know, I think it was you that said, well, it looked like you're in question. Your life's in danger or in question at the end. And you're like, no, but of course not. Cause you're here. Cause you're here talking to us
also,
right now.
But
so
we
of
can't.
Course you're probably here for a couple of episodes. The season.
And then she didn't either confirm nor deny that. But also, you know, my own detective work is busted because when Nestor Carbonell showed up on the NBC show, the Catherine Heigl show, what's it called?
State of Affairs.
When he showed up on State of Affairs, I'm like, oh, well, Sheriff Romero's dead. But of course, this, you know, both the studio let him work full time.
Well, you know what? That's the beauty.
So who knows?
That's the beauty also of a show that only has a 10 episode run per season.
Right.
Because it's easier for the cast to be booked in other shows, because what ends up happening is if you have a show that's too long and the commitment's so big, if somebody gets, especially a show like Bates Motel, or a good example right now is Walking Dead. There was a character, I'm not going to spoil it in case anyone saw it. There was a character who just passed away recently, and it happened actually a couple of years ago too with Shane. That I could spoil because that was old. Where he got cast,
I'm not caught up, by the way.
He got cast on, well, too bad. He got cast in Mob City in Frank Darabont's before he was officially gone from The Walking Dead. And if you follow the trades or you see any of this stuff, of course you start thinking, oh, well, if he got booked on another TV show, it means he's a goner. Right. He's either got a really small part in this one or he's a goner in the other show. So I love the opportunity. This is also a privilege of having a small, really good, compact season, and the actors have the freedom to also pursue other projects and not have to be written out of shows.
Well, I mean, and we, so anyway, we'll figure this out one way or another, but I think that we all, I like it. We're already twisted. Like one way we thought, oh, we know where this is going, and then we already don't.
Yeah.
So I really genuinely don't know.
It's exciting to watch.
What's going to happen. I mean, it makes us want to go, we have the first six episodes, makes us want to go blow through those first six.
Yeah.
But we're not going to do that.
We're not going to
no.
do that.
No. It's okay if we do. It's okay.
But we might watch episode three right after this.
We might. All right. So, let's move on. So that happens. So we'll figure this whole mystery out. I think that's cool. Norma is on the prowl. She's looking around and she's trying to figure some things out. And I do want to just note a couple Vera Farmiga acting choices and cool things they did. Once Emma says, "Oh, Norman was, you know, Norman dropped her off in the Porsche."
Emma's awful with keeping secrets.
Oh yeah, she's spilling the beans left and right. But God love her. She doesn't know. She's just trying to be part of the family. Yeah. Like, oh mom, Norman's fine. Norman dropped her off.
Yeah, it was sweet.
That weird,
sweet.
Like,
she doesn't, yeah.
That he amazing close up. Nice. That amazing close up of Vera Farmiga.
Have you noticed her breath? She, like, when she gets angry and her piercing blue eyes.
Oh, she's killing the game every time. Like, all of her choices are amazing. So you can just see her wheels turning, like, oh, my God, oh, my God. And there's anger, there's fear, there's all that.
I have to take up these groceries because this ice cream's going to melt.
Yeah. That's my favorite, because it's this push it, and we all know all the history.
Yeah.
We're all just like normal. We're flashing back to season one, season two, every episode in that 15-second push-in, and Emma's like, "What's wrong?" I was like, "Oh, I got these groceries. I gotta go."
Yeah,
you know. So anyway, I love that. Also, when she confronts Norman about this, like, you know, and that and her, you know, quintessential Norman, you know, she runs in, confronts him, and he's like, "I don't know." And the line,
he hesitated.
Well, the line when she says, "I don't know why unhinged women seem drawn to you."
Yes, I wrote that down too, because that was that was such an ironic statement, because she was becoming so unhinged in the episode.
I mean, his mom is Norma Bates.
Exactly.
Like, that's
and
why.
And so sexually charged.
Yes. I don't know why unhinged women seem to be drawn to you. And I don't know. You know, that's not even a fair statement, because all the women that Norman have been, you know, hanging out with don't seem that unhinged.
No.
Even who we forgot, who everyone on YouTube
Cody. Everyone
Cody.
Reminded Cody. Yeah, yes. I zoned out on that
yes.
one.
And Cody,
yes, he's
you know.
With Cody. And I had a thing for Cody, too. I was like, damn.
Well.
And I forgot. Thanks.
Thanks, Nando.
That's okay. Happens.
Insane. All my jokes were off air. All right, so... yeah, so I thought that was very interesting. Like, she was a nice woman, you know, and that exchange back and forth. But what I was really... taken by is once they got to the restaurant, you mentioned the scene and she goes in to look. She was a nice woman.
Mm-hmm.
She was a nice woman. And Norma's like, "What did she say?
What do you mean nice?
I mean,
why past tense?"
And now is that, do you think that's something, or is that another sort of red herring, like, or MacGuffin, or?
You said it before earlier that at any time we kind of go through these like conspiracy theories and beat around the bush and do all this stuff, it always ends up that he did it. And I think that at the end of the day, the simplest answer is the correct answer.
Right.
And so I think that he probably did it.
Spoiler alert, Norman Bates is psycho.
You know, yeah, exactly.
Just in case
and
you didn't know.
I think that it has to do with something. Like, I think that maybe he had sex with her and then felt guilty, because there's that pivotal scene with Norma and Norman in the restaurant where they talk about, Emma asks him, "Do you feel bad after sex?"
Yeah. Well, I want to get to that in a second, but because I want to talk about that.
It's important.
It's very important, but I want to skip back up to before that. Once, when Norma's in the restaurant, there's a weird, like, you know, him, you know, props to Freddie Highmore as well. Freddie had his own sort of push in, and, you know, he does this incredible sort of, like, Super Crazy Eyes look.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that was the Super Crazy Eyes, end of Psycho, end of season two kind of look.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we're supposed to read into that. Like, he's looking and he's just, I don't know if it's just Norman being Norman or if he's like zoning out into like crazy psycho mode. Like, how did you read that?
But it's not being him. I feel like he's almost graduating to becoming psycho because right. before it would be like, Mother, I don't know what happened.
Right.
I'm worried. Like, I hope she's okay. I just want to, you know, but now he's like,
but there was like a weird pleasure he was taking, like watching his mom and he remembered like.
It was something. Yeah. It was definitely cryptic and very, very weird.
I mean, did you catch that look, Nando? Well, they hope he did, because it was when Norman was in the restaurant and he kept pushing on Norman, he had the weird, like, crazy psycho look.
Yeah.
No, well, how did you read that?
He's been doing a lot of weird psycho looks. I don't know if I really looked at that one in particular.
Did he do it or did he not do it?
Well, the thing I kind of tried to jump in with this when you were talking about Norma's conversation when she was confronting Norman in the beginning when I wrote it down here too. When she asked him, "Did you see the girl in room 4?" He had this close up as well, and he had this really—it was really minute—and I had to watch the show twice to catch it. But it was mm-hmm. like a little, like a very big hesitation, like he was going to say something, and then you could see almost like the switch in his eyes go, "No, of course not. I haven't seen her mother," you know. And
when he was cutting up the goat.
No, this was when I think this was.
He needs a bigger freezer, by the way. She's like, okay, yeah, bigger freezer.
Yeah, you know what? I think it was when he was cutting up the goat. I think it was when he's cutting up the goat. I didn't write that part, but it was right when she went downstairs to talk to him about trying to get a window shade. You know, to check on the window shade.
That was. I love how the tone that she delivered that line in.
Yeah. So yeah. So generally, I mean, I'm seeing this obviously as there's a little switch. I really keep seeing that vision from the end of last season of his mother just appearing. When he's doing that polygraph test and telling him, "You didn't kill, you know, Miss Watson, because I did," and I almost feel like that switch just being like he's listening to another conversation in his head with his mother. So yeah,
I think that this
interesting.
I think that this is just in the whole zooming out from just what we're watching is this dramatic, you know, this wonderful show Carrie Aaron and Carlton Keyes have created. Like, I mean, this world. It's really quite remarkable what they're able to do. Like, we already know the answers. Norman is crazy. Norman's mm-hmm. a killer. Norma is crazy.
And yet we're
like,
still second guessing it.
We know the answers. We know the answers. But as we're watching it, we're like, well, is Norma? I mean, did she? We're like, oh, but poor Norman. Oh, did he? And like, it's, I don't know. This is this weird thing of where I'm always trying to figure out.
DNA dance. Well,
DNA dance.
Yeah. I'm always trying to figure out. There it is. Hashtag.
I really hate the word crazy when we talk about this stuff because I think. Crazy. No, well, here's the thing, because I think we've talked about this a while back, even uh-huh. on other shows that we've done.
Okay.
Maybe not with you, but I think when you just call a character crazy,
uh-huh.
you're dismissing a lot of the character.
Fair
it's
enough.
Kind of like saying a bad guy is, oh, well, a bad guy's crazy, bad guy's right. bad, but a bad guy even has his reasons for, he thinks what he's doing is for the greater good. With Norman, he's just obviously got this internal struggle within him, and that's his mother.
No,
with Norma, she obviously has a lot of issues, but I think just calling someone, and this is me, I think calling someone just crazy just really limits the range of possibilities that, you know, it just eliminates certain possibilities for us to look at.
I completely understand. I completely understand the complexities of both characters.
But I do agree that because we know what happens in the movie, we know what the end result is. The end result isn't necessarily, you know, is that Norman Bates is psycho,
right.
Which is kind of like another word for crazy.
With the looks, he's graduated in a lot of ways. He's graduated to, you know, bigger animals. Now he's got a baby goat. He's graduated. So I think that now he's just, his looks are just, it's like a nice transition into just.
Progression.
Exactly. He's just becoming
psycho. And it's scarier because it's a good point because, you know, the bigger the animals, I think the more comfortable he gets.
It's a goat. He's a bigger, like, he needs a bigger refrigerator. Norman's
yeah.
like, whatever.
Yeah.
But I want to respond to, like I said, Nando, I understand the complexities of both characters and the acting job they're doing on both characters and the complexities of playing the level of psychosis, but from my point of view, it's crazy. Crazy. I'm going to say it. Like James Brown said, I don't know karate, but I know crazy. And they are both crazy. With a capital K. I'm saying it. Anyway. But yeah, I hear you.
I got it.
So that exchange and, you know, with the look in the car and they go back out and then Norman decides to tell Norma, you know, like that he's with Emma. Like, you know, he's decided to.
I'm okay now. I'm okay. Yeah,
exactly. It's like his safety net. I'm dating Emma. I'm normal.
Yeah. So she's like, don't worry about me.
Normal people do
that. I'm not going out killing people, Mom, because I've got a girlfriend. I'm normal.
And that's exactly what he said when she asked at dinner, too. She was like, why are we dating? Well, it's just, you know, it's like the natural progression. Yeah.
Lots of things don't work, but this seems to be working.
Right.
So it just seems
to be working. Or as he told, his mom, he's just trying to lay some foundation. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Lay some foundation.
Lay some foundation, among other things.
Well, he doesn't really seem to want... It's almost like he's scared of that sexual side of him when Emma was, like, grabbing his hands and trying to interlink. Like, he's kind of pulling away from her as much as he says that he wants to date her.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about that dinner and the Norma-Emma interactions. We'll get back to Caleb and Dylan and Jake Hogan later. But, like, I want to talk about the Norma and Emma interactions, which I agree were all...
I loved them. We got to see the young Norma, like the caper... Sure. Or sorry, the young Emma, like the caper Emma.
Yeah.
Like the season 1. She's like, well, did you try going in her room?
With the flashlight. Yeah.
Yes.
Scooby-Doo Norma.
The Scooby-Doo Emma with a... Norma with an oxygen tank? No.
Sure.
Emma with an oxygen tank.
Velma with an oxygen tank. Yeah, try going in her room. And she said something that was also really interesting when they were in that room. And about the energy. About, you know, it's interesting how when you see the way that people lay their belongings, it's almost like they're still there. Like the animation of them still exists.
Right.
It was just, I feel like nothing in the show is by accident. And I feel like the dialogue is so... It's just small, but it's there, and absolutely, everything has a meaning. And I was like, what does that mean?
Yeah, I don't know. But maybe, yeah, I don't know. Because there's nothing in the show happens by accident, and every little thing.
It means something. And so what is that? I mean, that to me, that almost said, hey, you know what? She's dead. She's no longer there. However, her animation is still around.
Yeah.
The essence or of clues, her is still around. Yeah.
Clues to where she was or who she's been. I'm on record by saying she's not dead. Uh-huh. Just for the record, I'm gonna go on record and say she's not dead. But you know, I think it's obviously that body floating face up is not her.
Yeah.
But you know, we'll see.
Is it not her?
I'm saying it's not her. I'm on record right now saying it's not her. So we'll see. But I could be wrong. But
that's the brilliance of the show.
I could be wrong. Who knows?
You could be wrong. Guess you
no
are.
Accountability. But when that in the search of the room, Emma picking up the little feather duster thing was kind of funny too. She's very like, she wasn't very shocked. She was kind of, you know, I don't know. I liked her look there.
Norma's a little disgusted. Yeah. What does she do? Isn't it obvious?
Isn't it obvious? And she's like, but you know, back to Norma and Emma. All their interactions. Emma's very much on the, you know, on the aggressor here. And Norman is sort of like either just either on the retreat or holding his own in a really nervous way. And it says a lot about, I mean, those first couple of interactions, especially when they got right to it at dinner, they got right to it and just started talking about it. I mean, Emma was kind of dancing around it a little bit, kind of saying like, you know, it'll be nice to see a whole other side of you that you don't see as friends, wink, wink.
Yeah.
And then Norma's like, did you have sex with Dylan?
You
know?
Gunner?
Gunner, I'm sorry. Sorry. No, yeah, did you have sex with Gunner? Yeah, so, but what I found in that thing was like, you know, it said a lot about Norman's relationship to sex because Emma was had a very sort of, everything she said, all of her actions was very natural and very touching, and this is what we want to do. And then all of her innuendos or direct conversations were like, look, sex is something that's magical. It's all these other things. And Norman's like, well, I wouldn't call it magical.
Mm. Exactly. Like, the basis of procreation. So she thinks of it as this idealistic thing, and he thinks of it as this like shameful, you know,
100%.
And he does not like it. And I think on a lot of levels, he doesn't want to have sex with Emma because I don't think that I don't think that he will like her as a friend anymore.
Well, I mean, he had sex with Miss Watson, and we don't know what happened with Annika yet, but he had sex with Miss Watson. Look what happened to her. You know, the one time that we did see him in a sex scene, because I can't remember actually he did have sex with Cody. I guess we saw the beginnings of that scene too. I'm not as familiar. I haven't rewatched season 2 like I've watched season 1. Pardon me. What's my point? My point is...
I'm here.
Well, my point is actually when he first confronted Emma about having sex with Dylan, you could almost see that switch almost click with him too. You almost saw him be a little bit aggressive. Right. The closest thing I could think of is like when he was talking with Bradley after he confronted her about...
Yeah.
That's the closest kind of like feeling
nice girls
that came from.
Yeah.
You know, and Emma was able to talk him out of it by doing the whole magical thing, kind of snapped him out of it.
Sure.
But for a second, I think he was... Because, look, nice girls don't go sleeping around with other people.
Yeah, right. No.
I think that also the... Well, I think the foundation of Norman Bates as a character and sort of his motivation for killing women is this whole sort of like duality between I'm attracted to this woman, I'm sexually attracted to her, I may or may not have sex with her, these are the feelings that I'm having or the actions that I'm acting on, and then extreme, like, the Norma side saying, like, why would you do that? Mm-hmm. She's dirty, you're dirty, she's horrible, mm-hmm. she's a terrible person, you've got to do something about it. So I think you're right. There's a part of him that's afraid he's fighting those urges. You see him sort of fight those urges with Emma because, you know, he's a teenage boy and he wants to have sex. But on the other mm-hmm. hand, he's like, I can't because who knows what this will unlock or what this means. And but, I think that's going to, you yeah. see that all on his face.
But I love what Emma said to him after that whole interaction, after he debunked the whole magical thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, she just straight out said, I love your mom, but I think she loves you so much that she can't stand the thought of you growing up.
Right.
And maybe this gives you a feeling that being an adult, being sexual is somehow wrong.
Yeah. She
hit it right on the head.
Bam. She just spilled it. Yeah. And I think she's right. I mean, she's spot on with that, right?
Yeah.
And so she's the one, maybe the one who will always have... who always understands Norman, even at the more she knows, the more she understands. You mm-hmm. know,
yeah. Who was it that said that she was the moral compass of the show? Did somebody say that?
I might have. I like using that word, but I don't know if it was me.
Yeah.
I'll take credit for it.
I'm gonna take that credit away from you instantly.
I like the thing about Peter Pan, though.
I do like that.
The Peter Pan reference, and then
oh my god, that whole someone if it's not up yet, someone should put that up as a meme. That whole reaction when Peter and Wendy didn't get to have sex. She had this crazy look in her eyes when she did that. And it goes,
that was such a sitcom take.
Oh, that's such a meme. That's a meme. Such, like, please send your memes out to me. Yeah. I want to know.
It's like a Jack Tripper reaction to like Chrissy walking through the living room.
You did the old reference.
And I'm dating the heck out of myself. And I was like, Three's Company.
It's
a Three's Company reference. It's a show from the 80s. All right. So, yeah. Actually, like, you know, I actually went back this past week, and I can't remember when, but I actually watched, I had to rewatch Psycho again because I had to pop it in because, let's see, you know, Art and Card totally was like, you know, calling us out and says, why do you keep saying the famous cabin number 4? Marion Crane died in cabin number 1. And him and someone else did that as well. And it's true.
But 4 has significance on the TV show
from the
first season.
I
get looking at the movie reference and seeing where everything ends up. But yeah, you know what? Nothing's happened in that room yet. We're looking at the prequel.
Right.
Right now, based on the prequel, this is room 4.
So, the cynical production.
We weren't really, yeah, I personally wasn't saying, ooh, because you know what happens in room 4 in Psycho.
You were
saying that? I wasn't. I was just talking from like the beginning of season 1.
No, I'll do a full mea culpa to the cynical production out there. This is my PSA to you. I overly dramatically kept saying the famous room number 4 when in fact Marion Crane was killed room number 1, you know. So they did. We mentioned Keith Summers in season
1,
you know. So
you had 3 choices.
There are reasons that's sort of our internal thing. But I felt like I along the line got him crossed.
No, I get it. And I think there's sometimes, you know, we have to remember. Obviously, people know the source material. We have people talk to us about on iTunes. Someone put a review. We haven't had any reviews for this season yet, but someone put a review saying that in the book Psycho.
Yeah.
You know, I guess they were listening to our old podcast when they said in the book Norma's men. It's like, yeah, we get that, but we're also. You know, it's a line we're trying to cross, we're trying to make here. And the TV show, it's its own entity, but we do obviously refer to other things too.
Well, there's
I love that people are so into it though, and that they'll give that feedback.
Yeah.
Well, look, there's a lot of, I mean, you know, rewatching Psycho, and I recommend it to everyone out there. Go rewatch Psycho if you don't own it, rent it, Netflix it, whatever. I'm not sure if it's on Netflix.
It's not streaming.
It's not streaming. Okay. So go. I own it. So do whatever you do.
So borrow it from Braswell.
There's this great Alfred Hitchcock Blu-ray collection that's out right now that has Psycho and Vertigo and the Birds and
let's have a viewing party at your place, man. I want to see all those.
Yeah, but anyway, there's so many references. You know, Carlton Cuse and Carrie Aaron do a great job. Like we were talking about with Nestor in our first episode, mm-hmm. so many Easter eggs. And there's so many just direct things. Like they even the whole the overpass, the whole, which is a gigantic storyline in the whole Bates Motel,
the bypass,
mm-hmm. which is Starman, is of course mentioned. This is mentioned in prominently in Psycho. Like this mm-hmm. is Norman's whole thing. Like, you know, we don't have much business anymore. They built the bypass.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now we're off the main highway, and it's kind of like it's like a throwaway line in Psycho is like a major plot
is
point
exactly,
of the Bates
yep.
Motel. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just, there's a lot of cool stuff like that in there. So please check it out. Anyway, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, we should probably get into Dylan and Dunkel. And yep. also, I'd love to touch base with Romero and Norma. Romero.
Well, let's go back to Dylan. So Dylan and Caleb. So Dylan apparently has allowed Caleb to stay because mm-hmm. he's chilling up there with
and
Gunner.
Caleb's very valuable. He's helping with the irrigation for the plants.
Yeah, he's
everything.
Up there doing his thing. And Dylan's mm-hmm. kind of begrudgingly, you know, kind of warming up to him, but not... and they're hanging out, and he's trying to get out of there, and you know Caleb's saying have a beer, hang out, and they're kind of the three amigos are hanging out, and then there's this dog confrontation,
the mad dog,
mm-hmm. and you know first of all Caleb just pulls out a gun, like I didn't know Caleb was strapped. Is that a big thing? Like Caleb's like I got it's... this, plop plop plop. Like what? Where did Caleb get a gun?
I think that is opening the door for the fact that Caleb is probably not who we think he is.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of Caleb that we don't know yet, and right. don't forget that.
Sure. Yeah, we know nothing about
yeah,
Caleb, actually.
Absolutely
Zero.
Nothing.
And we're, you know, it's funny, like, how we, you know, he was so earnest in, but also suspicious in season two when he shows up, and he just wants to tell the truth. And then and even at the beginning of this season mm-hmm. episode one, he was also sort of earnest and like, look, man, I'm just trying to...
And a little grovelly, too.
Yeah, I'm trying to set this thing up. And now we see the edge. We see the edge come out.
Mm-hmm. Kind of a dick.
Well, yeah, kind of a dick. Well, we see we got a visit from the super creepy Ryan Hurst, a.k.a. Chick Hogan.
I thought that was hilarious.
Like, I wish I could whistle. I totally do the whole, like,
the whistle.
With my dog.
Yeah, for my dog. And I like the way he just rolls up and just throws a rock.
Throws a rock right at the porch to get his attention.
Like, hello. Like, what are you doing?
It's like he's talking in riddles.
Yeah, he is. Mm-hmm. Looking for my dog. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I don't... First of all, was that his dog?
No.
Right. He doesn't have a dog.
When he confessed after they went over to his
place,
he said, what dog? Right. I don't have a dog.
That's
but
right.
Caleb said it first. Caleb's like, he doesn't have a dog.
He just saw.
And then he was like, no, I don't have a dog.
Right.
It was just weird. And then the whole conversation in the cabin, he was talking to Dylan, but looking at Caleb.
Right. Got it.
Talking to Dylan, but looking at Caleb.
Yeah. Which
was weird.
Yeah. Well, because it was his way of sort of saying, Dylan, you know how things work around here. This guy, Caleb, whoever he is, mm-hmm. you know, it's kind of like the Romero conversation, too.
He's messing with the ecosystem.
Yeah, Dylan, we know how these things work in this town. Mm-hmm. This is how things go. Like, don't let this guy come in and tell you anything. And it's also him saying, like, because the confrontation was always between Caleb and Chick. Like, mm-hmm. Caleb was coming over there to rattle Chick's cage or kick his ass or do whatever until he saw those guns up in there. Like, he had, like, 50 guns or whatever.
Yeah.
But even then, Caleb was
That's right. I got more than a few.
I got a lot. How many is a lot? More than a few. Less than a bushel.
That was a very cool sort of, confrontation between the two of them. And then Dylan's kind of like, okay, sure. I like how Dylan didn't, hey, look at me. He was just answering, yeah, man, sure.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I don't know.
How many plants you get? It doesn't matter. 99. We got 99.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand why Cambridge...
You guys remind me of a duo from a certain book. You got any rabbits? I love that.
Yeah.
Mice
what?
And Men.
I didn't get that.
That's a Mice and Men reference.
So he was pretty much calling Caleb Lenny.
Yeah. It's calling him a retard.
Yes. So that was...
You know what? That's interesting. That's not the first Mice and Men reference from a Carlton Cuse show. There was a big Mice and Men reference in Lost, too.
Mm.
With season three.
Love.
Season three, it's the episode with Ben and Sawyer going up to the mountain.
You're just pulling episodes out?
Episodes? Yeah.
Awesome.
Wow. Okay, that's impressive. Yep. Anyway, so that happens. So that
and Ryan Hurst, we just got to mention. I mean, sure. He's awesome from Sons of Anarchy. Opie. So much love for that character.
Wasn't he in Remember the Titans too?
I believe he was.
He played the racist.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. I Remember the Titans. Remember the Titans. Varsity Blues and The Program are all one big movie.
And
for
We
me.
Are Marshall.
I never saw that one.
Oh, well, there you go.
Just The Program.
Trust me, if you see that one, it's
Varsity Blues and
really
and what's the, Remember the Titans all
and,
one big
and
movie
Rudy. And Rudy
and Rudy
and Rudy. I'm just kidding.
It's a part where Denzel NFL yells at Dawson, right?
Every sports movie. Oh my god!
All right, I got it.
Okay.
All right, so yeah, so we'll keep our eye on that. That's very interesting and very cool. So getting back to the Normero situation
and the Norma Caper,
and the Norma Caper, which
I will
do.
I will quote Sanfilippo when Norma is not caper qualified.
No.
She should not go on capers solo.
Her caper game is weak.
No, she tried, though. She tried to be Annika. It was cute.
Yeah. She tried. So that, so we had that, you know, Romero was very chivalrous and gave the money, offered the money and gave the money. And, you know, maybe he's got some extra cash lying around from his dealings or whatever.
Hopefully. But, hopefully it wasn't all burned in the house.
Well, I guess it wasn't all burned. Well, look, he's over at the Arcane Club. It's a whole bunch of rich people, and who knows what he's doing there.
Pressing the flesh.
Yeah, I was shocked. Like, if you would have said, who do you think is going to jump out of the bushes and get Norma? I did not know it was going to be him.
I did not. This is, again, the cloak shrouded in mystery this man is.
Yes,
he's just a big cloak of mystery.
He is, yeah. It was crazy.
Yeah. But yeah, so that was very cool. That exchange was great, and the hug and the weird, or I don't know, maybe you'll hug. And then once she did hug, as Norma does, she's like hugging him. She's nuzzling.
She was, like, grabbing,
she's grabbing his neck. It's like 1 minute ago, a second ago, you didn't know if you were going to hug him. Now like you're
a,
like,
it was like a baby monkey holding onto her.
Like her nose is like in his neck.
She's sniffing him.
She's sniffing him, totally.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So now, when she ran up to the car again, when he was about to pull away,
yeah,
I thought that she was going to talk to him about Norman and about Annika.
Maybe she was. This is what's great about that. This is what's great about the way she plays this, because you never, this is, again, back to Vera Farmiga, you never know, like, how, what the hell she's going to do. Anyway, we're running short of time, but I want to get to the party. So she sneaks, she tries to get to the party. Mm-hmm. She puts in her best sort of like, I'm on the list.
Yeah.
And then works. So she hops the fence and does her thing. Peeks in the
hikes
window.
Hikes up her skirt.
Hikes up her skirt. Does all, I loved all of that, by the way. It's like, we saw this before, like in season one, when Norma's sneaking around and she's doing her whole, like, you know, caper stuff. So, peeking in there, that shot of just her eyes just widen. Like, you know, I love that. And then, of course, we see, you know, as I mentioned before, Kevin Rand.
Yeah, can I mention, can I just mention that I think it was probably the same time last week, last episode, the same time, wasn't it Norman peeking in a window?
Yes.
And then cut to this week, it's Norma peeking in a window.
The voyeuristic family, the family that peeping toms together, schmoms together.
But Norma
family that
see.
Peeps together, sleeps together.
Oh, dude, Casey, I like that one.
Peeps together, sleeps together.
All right, they do.
Yeah. But right. Norma did get to see more.
Yes.
She did get to see more.
She,
more. She got a lot more. So is Romero... What is his role in this club?
Hey, man. All I saw was a big cloak of mystery.
Okay. I don't know. Security.
You think it's security?
No. He said he was pressing the flesh with some politicians. You know, he's just he's just pressing the flesh, hanging out.
Well, he's got to make
some... What are you doing here?
But he's got to make some moves now that Dylan doesn't want to do. Like, he's got to, you know...
Yeah, but he did say, this is not a good place for you to be. I'm not here for that. He said that, but he said before she left, he said it was kind of like under a lot of stuff. But he said it's dangerous for you.
Yeah.
So he knows the danger.
Yeah,
for Norma
he's dropping some hints, but that will be revealed. And we talked about, of course, the last scene of Norman and Norma go up the stairs, saying everything's fine, but everything's not fine. We have a floating dead body in the
dun dun dun. Now, do you guys think before we go, because I know that we're running low on time? Do you guys think it's Annika?
Well, do you want to jump into predictions? What, do you have any news first, though?
You know what? Since we're running low on time, I'll save it for next week.
Okay. And we can shout out people. We'll do that next time.
Shout out to everybody.
So let's go to predictions. Let's just go to predictions. Shout out to everyone. We have a lot of thank you all for listening and watching on YouTube and on iTunes. I think we're like the number two show in AfterBuzz right now.
Are we?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Number one
thank
and number
you.
Two. So thank you so much for downloading on iTunes, which comes from. And rating us on iTunes, and you know,
well, yeah, let's get some more. We don't have any new ratings for this season for iTunes. So
yeah, but thanks for rating us and listening on iTunes, and also on YouTube for watching us and commenting. We had a lot of comments this week.
Good and bad. Yeah, thank you for that. You know,
all of it.
Put us in our place.
Yeah,
subscribe,
especially Nando.
Especially me.
Okay, predictions, Nando, go.
I predict, you know, one thing I did want to say, when Emma and Norman kissed at the end, Norman said, I don't want to start something I can't finish. That was another kind of creepy line.
Like, in other words,
I don't want to kiss you if I can't kill you later.
Not with my mom around. Yeah. So he did say that. I thought that was a creepy line too. My predictions, darn it. You know, I think that is Annika. I'm going to say, I think it is. I think the fact that we have Tracy here.
Fine. Annika, okay. know Anna
I do. Kev. I think that that was A&E's brilliant way to promote the show and completely just, you know. I think that Annika is dead, but I think that she'll be back in
flashbacks.
In flashbacks.
Yeah. Sure.
I think that she'll be back on the show in flashbacks, but I do think that she's dead, and I do think that this is the beginning, and I think that Norman had sex with her and then killed her.
Okay. You know, the simplest answer is always the answer in the Bates Motel at the end of the day. I don't think it's her. I think it is someone else. I think there is someone else.
That's a simple answer.
Well, no, I'm just saying there is someone else, but I think it is the mystery that will have to be solved.
Okay.
I think the big cool thing will be that she'll come back, she'll pop back, and they'll be like, "Oh, I thought that was you," or whatever.
Right. Yeah. So
it'll be like, "There's a dead body was found." It's
or maybe
girl.
Annika killed that person.
Yeah, she's this height, she's this blonde, and everyone's gonna think it's her, Norman, and Norma, and everyone else. But then it'll be identified as not her, and then blah 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 blah.
Or maybe she's trying to fake her own death. There are a whole bunch of possibilities.
Okay,
here.
But I'm sticking with it's not her. That's okay. What I will say.
Okay,
I think that's it.
And I love the arcane. I love the fact that you tied that into season one with the slavery, the slave trade.
Yeah,
the one.
Yeah.
I think that's
I do want to mention Nando is wearing a wonderful
thank you
medal because he ran the LA Marathon.
I said,
what's your time, Nando?
5 hours 10 minutes.
He had
a
cold pizza on the way, a beer.
And a chili dog.
On the way.
I was eating all sorts of stuff. Thank you for everybody who tweeted at me last week and cheered me on or whatever. I appreciate it. Thank you for mentioning this because I wasn't going to put it on. You said put it on.
Yeah, man.
Be proud, Be proud.
The four times I've run the marathon, I have all my
medals. Oh, God.
Right. Where can we find you, Nando?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at NandoVel, NandoVel. You can also find me here at AfterBuzz for other shows like Walking Dead, The Blacklist with this guy, and Scorpion, and Survivor, and stuff.
They should just scroll your shows. Hi, I'm Dua. You can find me. You can find me at Dua Casey, DuaKissi. Joe.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah, that's it.
No Instagram yet?
No.
Come on.
No.
Grandma?
One of these days.
All right.
Okay,
I'm Joe K. Braswell. You can find me at Joe K. Braswell on Instagram and Twitter and here in the Blacklist and some other places
coming up
soon. Thank you very much for listening and joining and watching. We will see you all next week for Bates Motel Episode 3.
Woo!
Season 3.
Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.